This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and it's time for our monthly home improvement show. Chad Spate is back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build, and this month he has Tony Trapp back with him. He's the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Do you need advice on spring maintenance chores? Or maybe you have another home improvement question. Give us a call. Lines are open, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Chad, welcome back.
Thanks, Jill. It's always great to be here.
Thank you. And Tony, it's good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
You bet. So let's get right to it. Chad, why is it important really to even have like a checklist sort of thing every spring?
Sure. Well, there are a lot of things that do require regular maintenance in the home. And so general rule of thumb is in the spring and then often in the fall, there's certain things you want to do. So I think filtration, like focusing on the filters in our homes, is really important in the spring. For example, that might be the filters in your refrigerator or your water, drinking water supply, if you have a filtration system for drinking water, the furnace filter. You know, you should be changing a furnace filter every 3 months, but if you're not doing that, the absolute most important time is prior to the air conditioning season, because if you are not sucking air out of the home through the return vents, which is what goes through that filter, and your filter is clogged, you are not going to get good dehumidification of the home. You know, a furnace will pump out heat with a dirty filter, but it will not dehumidify the home with a dirty filter. The gutters need to be cleaned. You want to go look around your house, see what sort of things happen during the winter. You know, we have pretty challenging moments in the winter, even though we may not have had a very cold and challenging winter overall. There were some weeks when it was rough and, you know, deep freeze happens. You might have, you know, issues with your gutter system or your roofing system. It's good to look around and see if anything seems like it needs some attention.
Sure. Those filters are so easy to forget about because we don't see them. And like you said, the heat just keeps coming, so we don't have to worry about it. But that's a good tip. Well, let's start with the roof, Tony. What are some things to look for up there?
Yeah, certainly. Like Chad said, I mean, some of those windy conditions in the winter, if you have an asphalt shingle roof, look for broken shingles or missing shingles. Keep an eye on the animals. I mean, maybe there's a hole that appeared in your soffit or fascia and the birds are starting to make a nest. A big thing that I've found lately, which Chad was talking about ventilation, the bath fan vents for the black metal ones have little tiny screens that work really well to keep out the insects and the animals, but those can get clogged up and you don't necessarily see them. So if you get out some binoculars and you have that type of vent on your roof, see if that's clogged up. Someone might need to get up there and clean that. And if they come out the side of your house, you might have to actually open the flap to look behind to make sure the screen's not blocked, because that can make your bath fan not work as intended. And it's hard to see. Same thing for dryer vents, to make sure those are unobstructed on the outside as well. But yeah.
What about cleaning dryer vents? Is that something we should do on a yearly basis too?
Totally. Totally makes sense. I mean, those can build up, reduce efficiency, can be a fire hazard. There's professional companies that can do it for you. There's kits you can do yourself if you're handy. And, you know, if you want extra credit, you can start getting inside the dryer to clean that out too.
I have a kit. I haven't opened it yet. So I really need to do that.
You could support the economy. You'd be fine.
What about the roof? Are the gutters and the downspouts, Chad? What should we be looking for there for repair purposes?
Yeah. So at that critical moment when the ground is thawing, and that happened early this year. You know, that actually happened in February, and I know because the commercial building that I have, which is cinder block foundation that is all below the asphalt on the property and was not waterproofed. I know when the water unfreezes because I get a little bit of water flow into my basement at that in that property every year. And I know many people get that in their homes. The easiest way that you can mitigate against that is to make sure that the water is, in fact, flowing through your downspouts, that they haven't gotten clogged from the fall's debris. And, you know, sometimes things fall after you may have cleaned your gutters, and then it gets lodged in the winter, and it's not flowing well come springtime. So it's important for it to be flowing so it's not overflowing out of the actual gutter. And then the downspout wants to be positioned in a way that it's moving water away from the foundation. That's really important, because if you're dumping water right at the edge of your foundation, it's going to find a way back along that foundation. And if there's any place for it to come into your basement or crawl space, it will find a way.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Let's go to the phones. We have Marty in Lake Geneva who has a question. Go right ahead, Marty.
Thanks for taking my call. I am a slate and tile roofing contractor. And what we see often, and of course, regardless of what's on your roof, is that when bathroom vents are installed, they don't vent out to the roof. They vent into the attic, which puts all sorts of moisture in there. And we've seen mold on the bottom side of sheathing, et cetera, et cetera. Long story short, somebody's going to put a bath vent in for you. Make sure it goes out through the roof. Thanks.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah. Great advice. That is so important. I mean, we do see that occasionally. It is completely improper practice. And as Marty noted, it can cause a lot of damage in a home. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want to vent to the outside.
Yeah. Moisture in our home is not our friend, is it?
Not ideal.
Speaking of moisture, you had mentioned like foundations and things. So is there some place where we should, how should we go about looking for like leaks in our foundation? Are there, other than water coming through the wall, I know it can be obvious, but are there other places, Tony, that you could maybe be checking that we wouldn't think about?
You know, sometimes to check your sump pit is a good thing to look. Some people don't even know what it is, and they have them, and it's a buried crock in your basement floor, and usually it's connected to drain tiles that are underneath there, and that's a good thing to check. You can open up the top and pour down water to test it to make sure it works. Some of the units have a double plug where you can plug it in directly to the outlet to test to make sure that works as well. Some of the units even have battery backup. So if you have a system there, check to make sure that system's working, and that's kind of a backup system. If you've already done the grading and keeping the water with the downspouts, like Chad was mentioning earlier, this, the redundancies help to keep water out of the basement.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Chad?
Sometimes we put in systems in basements that allow water to potentially flow under a new subfloor. This is often a retrofit that you might do in an older home, or if you're just in a newer home, just wanting to have a little more of a softer floor underfoot so you're not directly on the concrete. You can inspect, typically there's a clean out at the drain when a system like that's installed, and you can see if you've got water flowing there. Because mm-hmm. once you have a system like that, it's designed to allow water to flow. But you'd probably want to know if water were flowing through it, because that's really more of an emergency situation.
Yeah, for sure. And what about things like our fixtures, water fixtures, you know, the toilet or different faucets? What should we be looking for there?
Yeah, the big thing after the wintertime would be that outdoor hose spigot, that when the first time you turn it on and connect the hose, make sure nothing froze on the inside. Because you might be excited looking at all the new plants outside, watering them, and then their basement's filling up with water and you don't realize it. That's more likely to happen if a hose was connected or one of the freeze-proof faucets, something broke or is not operating properly. So the first time you use that faucet again, please check inside right away to make sure it's not sprung a leak inside.
Mm-hmm. Chad, what about maybe in the bathroom?
Well, so one thing that requires occasional maintenance is the seal inside the tank on a toilet. will often get a buildup of mineral deposits because we have very hard water in many parts of Wisconsin, particularly in the Madison area. And so those mineral deposits will prevent that flapper from sealing tight when the tank refills. And for those of us that occasionally hear our toilet running, like refilling, that's a sign that that needs to be cleaned. And good thing maybe to put on the spring cleaning list.
For sure. Definitely. What about, let's see, what else was I going to ask you about? What about faucets themselves? They're fairly easy to fix, right? If there's a little bit of a leak,
depends on the faucet.
Okay.
It's always good, like Chad was talking about, liming up. Sometimes the aerators on the end of the faucet will collect some debris if you don't have whole house filtration. Sometimes it's common on wells if they're sucking up sediment, or depending on the distribution piping in the house, if it's like a galvanized system that can flake and get in there. Some of the older faucets, you're exactly right, they had seals that were easy to replace. Some of the newer ones have specific cartridges, so that's really specific. And I'd be careful. Sometimes you can get into a project that's over your head really quick with some of the faucets where it needs replacement rather than repair.
I'm sure no one has ever been there.
No. Don't start plumbing projects on Sunday night on a holiday.
Yeah. Very true. A listener emailed us, and recently during the warm weather, they had large ants, apparently about a half inch long, appearing in the kitchen and the basement. And occasionally there are also winged adults, which are very sluggish. Well, normally they use a mixture of boric acid and sugar, which usually slows and stops the invasion. However, they have not had any effect this year. Any suggestions about how to control them and how to prevent them? It's a little bit out of your wheelhouse, gentlemen, but...
Well, it sounds like it may be a carpenter ant infestation. And so, you know, the thing about carpenter ants is they really can only cause damage when there is damaged wood. Dry, intact wood, which can be, you know, attacked by a termite, you know, healthy wood is susceptible to termite damage, but we don't, you know, we have started to see termites in this part of the country, but they're still not a common thing. Carpenter ants, just like moist, rotting, or dry rot, you know, compromised wood,
it probably makes sense to look around and do a really thorough investigation on, you know, starting at the bottom and working up. There's, like Chad said, there might be some siding or a window or something that's decaying that's attractive to the ants. And if we can prevent that, get rid of the source, then hopefully they'll find a new home outside, not in the house.
Is that something that the homeowner can really do themselves, or should they have an expert come in?
So it depends on the house. And sometimes you can do it all from the ground. Sometimes you need to get out a ladder. And some folks, if they're not comfortable on ladders, that doesn't make sense to get a professional to do an assessment. I know a lot of times the animal and insect control folks can do a thorough assessment, and then you can make recommendations from there, whether it's a roofing contractor, siding contractor, remodeler, or someone like that. It could be a leaky pipe that's dripping, too. It might not be from outside water. So many different sources for water.
Right.
Certainly. All right. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Claire Neipert is our on-air producer today, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. Do you have any home improvement questions? Lines are wide open, so give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We're talking about home improvement with Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison, and Tony Trapp, the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling, also in Madison, where we happen to be. What a coincidence. If you've got a question for one of them, give us a call, 800-642-1234. So, Chad, you've been in a few times before, and you were backed up like crazy. How's that backlog doing these days?
Yeah, great question. So, we are still busy. We are still about a year out if you include the planning that has to happen at the front end prior to then putting a project on our calendar for production. So that's been holding the line. But I would say that, you know, interest rates have had a little bit of an impact on people continuing to move forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, by and large, we're still feeling like we've got plenty of work.
It's a good feeling.
But I feel like people are hesitating right now, in part because there's an expectation that rates are going to come down. And so they're like, why am I going to lock in this loan today when I can maybe wait 6 months?
Sure.
So, you know, that's the only thing that I've noticed. But mm-hmm. still plenty of people out there looking to fix up their home or address problems they were sure. ignoring during the pandemic.
Right. Tony, the same for your business?
Yeah, same. We're maybe 10 to 12 months out. Mm-hmm. We have, our staff is doing really well. And similar to Chad. Yeah, I mean, we're in the same market. East side mm-hmm. versus west side is not that different here.
Let's go back to the phone. We have Mike in Madison with a question. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, I have kind of a historical question for your guests related to the in-basement interior sump pits. When did that concept first get started, and why was it decided to put the sump and the pit inside the basement rather than immediately on the outside wall down below frost? And you know, we have generators that are outside and condensing units that are outside. Some people have their septic tanks and fields outside. Why did they ever decide to put this on the inside of a home where if you had a failure of your sump pump, you would end up with flooding? You're inviting the water into the house.
Yeah. Sure. So, Mike, that's a great question. And the simple answer would be when gravity allows you to allow the water around a foundation and around the footings to flow to a low spot somewhere on the property, that typically is done. And then you don't need to collect the water someplace. And I think the thinking is simplicity when you are digging a foundation and you are, you know, then putting all of these pieces in, having the sump pit there in the basement allows you to have easy access. But you're correct that then is a vulnerability. We end up with backup batteries and things like that, which Tony referred to earlier, that help us avoid that sort of a crisis where the pump isn't working. You might have a backup pump. But that is the basic reason that it's done that way. And in my where I'm a remodeler and not a home builder, I hesitate to say exactly when it became almost common practice. But I would just say from observation, homes built in the 90s or more recently almost always have a sump pit in them. And in the 80s, it's a little bit of a hit and miss. So I would say that's kind of when it was adopted.
I know in some of the even older homes, there was just a crack where the water would run across the floor to the low point in the basement, and then it would collect there and either get pumped out rather than a drain tile system at the footings normally. But Chad's right. If you can drain the daylight, that's ideal, and not have a pump system to pump it out. There are some times where pumps are outside, but usually then you have to get heating cables involved when it ejects out because of the wintertime, and it's another system to maintain. So I think that's more why they're inside, is the more things you have to maintain and they can break, even if the pump's outside, the basement's still a low point, and if it breaks outside, the water could still get in or outside. So I think it's just kind of simplicity. But there have been instances like in egress stairwells where I've seen exterior sump pumps or some really big window wells where they do exterior ones, but on the inside it's probably more of a cost and a maintenance issue that they're doing on the inside.
Okay, thanks for that question, Mike. Let's go to Ron in Duluth. Hi, Ron.
Hi, I wonder if you need to put a plastic vapor barrier underneath shingles when you put shingles on a roof on an unheated garage.
Go ahead, Tony. You're shaking your head.
I would say no. Don't do it. I would say on heated garage, make sure your roof's ventilated. I wouldn't introduce additional vapor barriers there. The garages are tricky, even if they're unheated, because you can moisture loads from both sides. So you're trying to make sure that roof sheathing can dry out and follow the manufacturer's instructions. So, I mean, essentially, if you did a full ice and water shield, that's a vapor barrier. But some of the shingle manufacturers have very specific installation instructions for doing that sort of thing. And you'd want to follow that. Or roofing, if you're doing metal roof, they're going to have very specific installation instructions. But generally speaking, you wouldn't put polyethylene underneath the shingles.
Okay. Thanks for that question, Ron. Bob in East Troy, go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. So I've been up on my roof to remove leaves from gutters and whatnot. And I take a look at my chimney, and here's two of these 13 by 13 ceramic flues protruding from the top of the chimney. Why don't I have rain coming down into my fireplace? And I'll listen to your response off air. Thanks.
Yeah, so, well, you may have some water come into your chimney. I mean, that is one of the reasons why we often put some sort of a cap over the chimney, is to reduce the amount of water that's coming down the chimney. But a little bit of water coming down that chimney isn't likely to ever be seen or noticed. But this is all part of creating a system that's going to be able to heat up and dry out and operate when hot gas or smoke is going through it. And then, of course, when nothing is happening, it is there to hopefully not allow too much hot air or conditioned air to escape out. So.
Yeah, they do make retrofit caps that have screens to keep the animals out. It gets exciting when people discover raccoons or squirrels in their house that like to make their wood ducks make their way down
duck,
there.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so that's been more common. But Chad's exactly right. A lot of times they tend to absorb water and you don't notice it. It dries out through the air movement.
Mm-hmm. Heard a fluttering sound behind the actual fireplace insert. Couldn't figure out what the heck it was. We had to pull it out, and sure enough, there was a wood duck. So yeah. those covers for chimneys are a very good idea. We had an email from Michelle, and she's wondering if you could recommend a book or a website along the lines of House Maintenance for Dummies. She's looking for something that covers yearly seasonal preventative care and inspections instead of realizing something is broken and then calling a repair person. I do believe there is a Home Maintenance for Dummies book out there, Michelle, but I don't know if that would fulfill all of those needs. Gentlemen, do you...
Oh, of a simplified one? I am in the weeds over here.
Yeah, I know. I have a book back in the office, but I'm forgetting.
I think the NARI website might have had a list at one point that I looked, and I'm just not recalling if I have a specific link for our caller.
Yeah, these guys know this stuff, so they don't have to look it up. But I would imagine that there are lots of books out there.
There are some great resources.
Yeah, and there's some great Facebook or social media groups, too, where you've got a weird question and ask for input.
Or time to meet a great librarian to make a recommendation.
There you go. There you go. I know a few. All right, let's go back to the phones. If you've got a question, the number is 800-642-1234, and that email address is ideas@wpr.org. Betty and Melrose, what's your question?
I noticed this winter when it was really cold that I had some frost in a corner of the interior of my house on the baseboard. I was wondering if I could take the baseboard off and spray foam some more insulation just into that corner without wrecking the vapor barrier.
Yeah, so that what you're observing there is not unheard of. We see it from time to time. You're probably not going to be able to easily impact the symptom that you've observed by doing something just on the face of that drywall or plaster. It might be a combination of factors. So sometimes we see this on a wall where folks have furniture or boxes and then they move something away and then all of a sudden you see that there's condensation there. And it just has to do with the orientation of, you know, which where that corner is relative to the cardinal directions and, you know, how the sun maybe regularly hits the house and an area that isn't properly insulated. The likely long-term fix is that the house has some places that are not well insulated and that needs to be addressed. It could be that there's some air passing through that wall cavity that is causing it to be colder, and thus a cold surface will have condensation. The moisture that's in your home will then condense there. It could be that there is a heat supply that is being humidified that is dumping near that location. And it could be that you could divert that heat supply so that it flows more to the middle of the room and away from the walls. I mean, these are just me thinking out loud about the physics of this. But at the end of the day, there is a reason why that is cold. And if we can get behind it and help prevent it from getting cold and not dump hot, moist air onto it, that will reduce the chances of it happening again.
All right. Well, hopefully that helps, Betty. Let's go to Cheryl in Berlin. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to know how important it is to have your air ducts cleaned.
Sure. You know, I guess it depends what's in the house. If you have pets, if you have construction that's been done recently, remodeling, it's a good idea to make the system work well and breathing that air. It's surprising how much can accumulate in the ductworks. I mean, an easy way to check is to look at one of the return airs, especially on the floor, and if it looks like it's full of dirt and debris, then it's not a bad idea to have that evaluated by a professional. If you're an older house, it's always good to look to see if there's maybe some asbestos tape or on the ducts and look that around, so you don't want to disturb that. So you might want to address that before you get your ducts cleaned. But yeah, I would recommend it. I don't think it's necessarily every year, but if you have a household with a lot of pets and a lot of debris, it's a good idea for indoor air quality.
Okay, thanks for that call, Cheryl. Bruce, on the north shore of Lake Superior, what's your question?
Well, you guys have a great show, and I really appreciate it. My question is, and it kind of dovetails on a couple of callers before me, is I have a sump pump, a catch basin, because I'm on a hill where it's rock, and so I am when I built the house, they said you have to pump it up to the drain field. So I'm wondering how long. So there's a big pump in there, and you know it pumps it up into the main drain, and then out it goes, and then up the hill it goes. How long do you think that system is going to hang in there for me, because I don't want to flood either? I'll hang up and listen to you.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce.
So I think what we're talking about here is actually a sanitary pump, which is part of the wastewater system, and having, basically the drain field having a septic system. It's something that I personally have very little experience with, because in Madison here, almost all of our clients, even in the surrounding areas, are on some sort of a city, on the municipal sewer system. But we occasionally have put in these grinders that are the pumps for this sort of a septic system. And I would
20.
Yeah, 20 years, maybe
20 years. Yeah. I guess it depends on your location. I mean, if you have reliable service contractors that can come out to replace it on short notice, I wouldn't worry too much. If that's not the case, have somebody out and get you a spare. So if it breaks, you can swap it out. But if it is that grinding system, and usually that's only when you're using it, unless it's a drain from like a humidifier or a furnace drain that would overflow. So the risk there is a little lower. But I mean, if this is a basement water drain tile sump pump system, which this one might not be, sometimes those have backup ones where there's a high and low pump. And the higher one runs off the battery, and that's a redundancy. So depends on the multiple levels of redundancy and what you're comfortable with in your area. But I don't know, 20 years, they could last longer.
Okay, thanks for the question, Bruce. If you've got one, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And you can also send an email. That's ideas@wpr.org. And we do have an email from Julie in La Crosse. She couldn't stay with us, actually, so it's a call. Earlier, you guys said that Wisconsin doesn't have much for a termite problem, and she politely begs to differ because in La Crosse, they have a big termite problem. She's had neighbors that had to tear their houses down because of it.
Yeah, I heard the same thing, that over the western side of the state, I think it was closer to like a railroad area, that there's like a little pocket of termites there. But I think in our area in Dane County and Eastern, it's not as big. But La Crosse and maybe a little south of there, it's been a while. But yeah.
We should probably ask that for PJ or Phil when they're on next time to talk about insects. We'll have to do termites. Make a note of that, Clara. Mary from Eau Claire, what's your question?
Hey, this is Mary. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling. I've kind of heard about roof venting. And my question is, we put an 5x8 addition, like for a mudroom, not heated. And during the winter this year, we would get kind of like little ice buildup when it was cold. And we'd kind of then open up the door from our kitchen into that area. What would you suggest? I know that, you know, we did not put a roof vent either. Someone else addressed the issue of putting roof vents on, not putting them on garages. Any ideas?
That's a tricky one. I guess it depends how the mudroom's insulated. Usually with ice dams, it's a sign that there's heat loss into the attic space, if there's an attic space. And if you can stop the air first, that's really important, and have adequate insulation, then the ventilation is kind of a backup system to help try to keep the underside of the roof sheath in the same temperature outside, especially when we have high snow buildup. Since we didn't have as much snow this year, you might have two things you want to explore. Is maybe there's an opportunity to make the space more airtight from the mudroom to the attic, maybe increased insulation and possibly ventilation. If that's not an airtight space from the mudroom to the attic and you add ventilation, your ice dams might get more fantastical.
And ice dams can cause a lot of problems, can't they, Chad?
They can. And I was just going to add to what Tony said, that you know, sometimes it's just the orientation of the room to the sun, and where the winter sun is hitting, say, up against the side of the larger house where the roof line might intersect. Sometimes that can just lead to some melt throughout the afternoon that then becomes an ice dam. And so the last resort for an ice dam, if it's problematic and you can't solve it through the other means of air sealing and just better overall design, would be heat tape to help prevent it from being a dam and allowing that water to melt and drain through the gutter system.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is that something most homeowners could do for themselves?
There are some do-it-yourself heat tape systems. They don't last as long as they used to. You want to operate them once below freezing. They tend to degrade when you operate them above freezing temperatures. There's some gutter helmet systems that you can incorporate heat tape that protect it from the animals and elements. Those are more commercial, hardwired. So there are some do-it-yourself systems. Just you kind of get what you pay for with those.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Mary. Nate in Hazelhurst, you are next. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a crawl space that I put down a vapor barrier on the floor. I put 2-inch foam board insulation on the block part of the walls coming up. I'm wondering what kind of insulation to use between the floor joists where the band joist and the sill plate meet.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Chad. Or...
So, you know, typically, the best material that can be used in that space, because there are a lot of different materials coming together, that you've got the cement, the wood, whatever might be there on the band joist. If a two-part foam can be applied in there, that, you know, it sticks to everything and it air seals. If there are any pipes or wires that are going in and out of the house through that space, which is where a lot of things come in and out of the house, it also seals to those. So that's the best material, and you really only have to apply like an inch of it if you want to do it just for sealing it, and then you can install a bat insulation on top of that. Or if you put 2 to 3 inches of the closed cell, you know, the two-part foam the first time, then that gives you adequate R value as well. Oftentimes that product is applied by a professional. It's not easily purchased by a homeowner. The two-part foam is not the same as Great Stuff, which is a one-part foam, which is to say that there's, you know, one batch of chemical in the can, and when you squirt it out, it just reacts to the air and eventually hardens. But a two-part foam is two chemicals being mixed at the nozzle. It reaches about 400 or 500 degrees Fahrenheit the moment that it expands and reacts, and then it sticks to those materials, and within a minute it is rock hard. You might get a little bit of odor off-gassing, but that is a great product if you can have a professional come in apply it in all the places that might be recommended to do to air seal your home.
I use that in my basement sill area, and what a difference did that make. Yeah. And you're right, it just goes in really nicely, covers everything, and yeah, very happy with that. So good luck, Nate. Our experts today are Chad Spate and Tony Trapp. What home improvement questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're talking about home improvement with Chad Spate and Tony Trapp. And our lines are full, so let's go right back. Valerie in Madison, what's your question?
Hi there. I have hail damage on my roof, so I need that replaced. I have a small partial attic. There's no, you know, whole body access, just a little 12 by 12 square. And my roof is the first one to lose snow every winter, and I get ice dams front and back. So I was wondering kind of how to coordinate between the roofer and the insulating company, what kind of insulation to be put in that small part of the roof that has an attic. And then I have a knee wall that runs along the back of the house, and I figured that probably needs additional batting.
Yeah, that's a good question. Those projects can be really challenging. We've taken on some of those. I would say start with an insulator and find a roofer that they're comfortable working with, because there's very tight coordination. Usually there's two ways to go about it. Either you're taking off the whole roof deck and then having a tarp installed briefly while the insulator can get in there through spray foam, typically what Chad talked about earlier, or there's some dense packing materials that can be used. But if you can get spray foam and some ventilation, that's the best of both worlds. And if that's too risky for you or they're not comfortable doing that, the other option is you're pulling the drywall ceiling down and working from below. There are some options to dense pack and make it a hot roof, but the insulator will be able to give you some advice if that's if you have the right space and conditions to make that work. But, yeah, I would find a roofer and insulator that have done this before together, and then you'll have a higher chance of success.
What tips do you have for finding someone like that?
Ooh, Nari of Madison is a great resource. It's the National Association of Remodelers Industry. They have a website where you can search for local contractors. And these are folks that are adhering to a higher standard ethic and are professionals in their industry.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the question, Valerie. And to follow up, we have Sue in Westfield with a question. Go ahead, Sue.
Yes, hi. Speaking of hot roofs, my question is about a back porch, which has a shed roof on it. And I was hoping that we could do something to make a small art studio out of it, which would mean insulating and windows and et cetera. My question is, can we do a hot roof without causing any major problems to the structure? And can we do it without the spray foam? Because I'm kind of worried about the off-gassing.
Well, first, what is a hot roof?
So a hot roof would be one that doesn't have passive ventilation in it. So insulation would be applied directly, filling the cavity or directly to the bottom of the sheathing. So there's no ridge vent or soffit vent system. There's a hybrid you can go in between that. With your situation, I would recommend talking to qualified remodeling contractors. There's even more going on there than a hot roof in terms of wind bracing and, and you know, making sure you don't have moisture issues on the floor and in comfort with adding all that glass. So it's good you're thinking about the top. Work down and maybe someone holistically can look at the whole project together so you'll be comfortable and focused on art and not cooking out there or having rotting issues.
Okay, thank you, Sue. Janet in La Crosse, you are up next.
Yeah, I recently moved to La Crosse, Wisconsin. How do I find someone reliable to do an energy audit of my 1960s home?
Great question. So focus on energy is our Wisconsin-based award-winning energy conservation program. And they certify auditors throughout the state. And they also manage the program, which gives out rewards for certain improvements that you might make. And the auditor is going to make you aware of both the recommended improvement and what you might qualify for in cash back if you actually do that. So I would go to Focus on Energy, or I would Google Focus on Energy Wisconsin, and you'll get to their website, and they have a list on there, depending on the region.
And that's an amazing resource, Focus on Energy. And you can get free stuff, people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really great resource.
Yeah, it really, really is.
It's funded. I'll just say this for our listeners. Focus on Energy is entirely funded by or mostly funded by a fee that is on all of our utility bills. It's the utilities, you know, decided that they wanted to encourage energy conservation as an industry. And so they tack on this modest fee that we just pay every month, and then they give that back to people that help reduce their energy bill. And that it's much cheaper for the utilities to do that than it is to build a new power plant.
Yes. And the free things, we're talking like light bulbs and all kinds of nice things. Yep. So check it out. Let's take an email from Greg. He says that he knows it's suggested to replace water supply hoses to clothes washers regularly. What about supply hoses to sinks and toilets? Should those be replaced regularly too?
I would say if they're the flexible ones, then it makes sense to investigate that and keep an eye on it. Some of the ones, the toilets are the solid metal ones that the plumber's actually bent and done a good job to install, and that would have less wear parts. That's less risky for bursting. Chad?
Yeah, I'm not sure like what a proper increment for age would be, but it's a great question, and it's just one of those things where when one of those hoses fails, you know, you hope that you're in town.
It can be pretty. There's equipment out there that's supposed to be able to sense when there's a burst hose. Some of it is in the hose that's supposed to shut it off. There's some different sensors you can get. So there's additional redundant systems that your plumber would be able to advise you about. But I would defer to the plumber on that and how long that would last. I don't want to throw out an age and be too short or too long.
Right.
Okay. Andy and Madison, what's your question?
Hello. I'm calling about a 1958 to 1960 ranch house where I have two windows in the basement that fill up like aquariums in rain. All the other windows don't. These two do. They're on the driveway side, and I'm going to have the windows replaced, but I'm about 120 days out before the windows can be replaced. Wondering what I can do this spring and summer before the windows get replaced so I stop getting water in the basement through those windows.
Sure. I would say you need a little roof for your window wells. So if you can keep water, sometimes on those ranches, like if this is a gable end on a driveway, it acts like a sail on a boat, and just all that rainwater hits and just sheds right down in the window well. So if any way you can keep water out of that well, they do make some plastic covers that you can buy at your local hardware store or box store, and that might just be enough to keep the water out of there. If it's a drainage issue like Chad talked about earlier, grading, you might want to investigate that. Even if you get brand-new windows, I would highly recommend you look at the source of the issue, how these window wells are collecting all that water, and try to divert it around there. You can get some custom-made window wells. I got fancy ones with some polycarbonate and plastic bending. But I would say try to keep water. Look at the source rather than the cause of the issue here, and that should lead you to your solution.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Betty in Middleton, you have a question.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I live in a condo, and it looks like some of the owner's windows are really old and leak, and the association covers heat and water for the condos. So how can we get an energy audit to show some of these owners that their windows are really in bad shape and wasting energy?
That is a great question, and full disclosure, I too live in a condo, so you got me thinking about that one. It is true that, you know, windows are typically the responsibility of the individual homeowners, even though they're covenants that require you install certain types of windows and keep the look of the property. I would be inclined to reach out to the board of your condo association and see if they might see the logic of that, because they're having to manage the finances on behalf of all of you. And yes, the heating bill is probably higher than it should be. And that would start the conversation. But you know, right now, the incentives really aren't there to necessarily have to worry about it. So.
That's right. Thank you, Betty. John emailed us. He would like to remove his home's single flue chimney. It hasn't been used in over 10 years, and he has a powered vent gas water heater and, of course, his high-efficiency furnace vents out the side of the house. The chimney is leaking some water into the attic, and instead of fixing that, he would like to just remove the whole chimney. Is there a reason he is not thinking of to not do that and keep the chimney in place?
The only reason would be if it's in a historic district and you have to have it there for aesthetic purposes. I fully support trying to get rid of those older chimneys. It's an older, we had to have them for the lower efficiency gas appliances. It's a maintenance issue after a while, energy issue. It's a thermal sink. If you can get rid of that chimney and use it for a laundry chute, cold air returns to the second floor, maybe a little closet, go for it. I can't think of any other reasons.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the chimney does have some sort of a structural component to it where there might be a beam or a joist or something that has I mean, it's rare, but it sometimes that That's is true. The case. And so if there is something structural kind of embedded in it, then you're going to have to either replace that or leave it below that point. But the chimney itself could be removed and something structural could be installed to open up that chase, as Tony is suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think, let's say that is the case. Thank you, Chad. Maybe just take it down to the attic roof line then,
mm-hmm.
and then you can cap it, insulate it, so then you get all those benefits of not having water come in, you're not losing energy, and it's still within the house, and that might be all you're up for that weekend. It's a undertaking to get rid of chimneys.
Yeah. And I would also add, we had a project that historic codes required that there still be a chimney, and we were able to get approved a faux chimney that was installed in lieu of keeping that old deteriorating
sure.
masonry.
It was
thing.
Made of brick, I'm assuming, this faux chimney?
Or you can't tell that it
Uh-huh. Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, we are talking with Chad Spate and Tony Trapp about home improvement. If you have any questions, you can give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Jill Nadeau. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show, and we'll be back right after this break for the news. We're talking about home remodeling on The Larry Mueller Show today. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for spending some of your day with us on WPR. Chad Spate is back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build, and with him this month is Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. What questions do you have on home improvement? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@WPR.org. And we've got a caller who's been waiting a little bit, so let's get to them first. Sally in Milwaukee, go ahead.
Yes, I have sunken window wells. I want to get down there and dig out the big rocks and then the topsoil that's gone into there, and then I want to find out should I put a barrier around the outside of the window of the form, and what to put more rock or whatever to put back in.
Yeah, so a couple of things that are a part of addressing improvements would be that you do want any water that gets into that window well to be able to percolate into the soil. So it sounds like that's part of what you're hoping to do, to make it so that it's easier for the water to make its way into the ground and not pool in that space. And then, as Tony had mentioned before, being able to put some sort of a cover over that window well is also helpful. It doesn't have to be caulked on or sealed, but if you were to seal it someplace, it would probably be where it meets the house wall, because water is always hitting a wall, and some particular rainstorms, if it's driving onto that particular wall where the well is underneath, you want to divert that water when it hits the cover out beyond the house. Another thing that we see occasionally is that a lot of water is getting into the well just along the foundation. It's coming in where the well meets the foundation. And so if that's true for your window well, if, in other words, you've done all these other things and you're still seeing a lot of water get into it, you may have to take some measure to try to seal that up. But, you know, you may not be able to overcome the water pressure there, depending on the situation, but that might help as well.
Okay, good luck, Sally. So before we go back to the phones, and there are some open lines, 800-642-1234. Tony, a little bird told me that you won some design awards recently. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we had a really neat project on a 160-year-old farmhouse, and we made a universal design bathroom and a kitchen. And we won 4 local awards and 2 regional awards. The 2 regional awards for Universal Design Kitchen and Universal Design Bathroom. And that was a neat project, a challenging one. We kept the outside of the house looking the same, but we're able to get a accessible bathroom designed in there. And getting the turning radius for like powered wheelchairs takes a lot more space when you get into it than you'd think. So it was a lot more than just grab bars. And then we did the addition and designed the kitchen again with more space and to accommodate the folks in wheelchairs and other folks that are not using wheelchairs.
And we've talked about universal design before on the show. It's been a while, though. Mm-hmm. Could you just explain what that is?
So for people who are thinking about, hey, if you're in a wheelchair, this could be all ages, anybody that's just has a different mobility. It could be different health issues. It's trying to think about, we go through all the stages of life and some people have different health or mental things and designing for that so it fits a lot more needs than just the standard and that people could age in place or if you have visiting guests that have an injury that they can get around and use the bathroom facilities and cooking facilities without all the additional things to overcome.
Mm-hmm. And if we wanted to see that particular design, because I'm sure people are curious, where would we be able to see it?
Sure. On our website, TonyTrapLLC.com, we have some pictures on there. And that's like a mouse trap with 2 P's. So, yeah.
That mouse trap with 2 P's. Okay. Emmanuel in Strawberry Point had an email for us. Do under the house wastewater pipes corrode? And if they do, does it risk causing a sinkhole and the house falling in? Can the situation be mitigated? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So cast iron pipes have a lifespan, think 80 to 100 years. Even plastic pipes, if let's say the joints weren't glued properly, could separate. And you could have a washout and sewer could go where it's not supposed to. So the easiest way is to do a camera with your local sewer company. They can put a camera in there and see. But if you're at that 80 to 100 year span of the cast iron pipes, I mean, it might be time to talk to your plumber and consider replacement. There are some relining services available. You'd have to look in your local area to see if that makes sense for you. But usually replacement is great because then it can ensure proper pitch. And we've been doing that a lot more in our basement projects. In addition, we install, as code required in the city of Madison, a backflow preventer. So if there's a sewer backup on the street, that flap's supposed to close and prevent all the neighbors' wastewater from coming into your house. So it's a good thing to keep an eye on. That's a maintenance issue that's coming up a lot now with people with ranches in the 50s, 60s, 70s, where 20 years ago, it wasn't as common, but now it's becoming more common in our projects to consider that.
Mm-hmm. Do they still use cast iron pipes for that, or what do they use?
More commonly, we've been putting in PVC below the concrete. There's because you're not having metal reacting with all the soils and the water. Right. But sometimes above the floor, they might use cast iron in specific circumstances.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that email. On the phone, we've got Kurt in Poinette. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, great advice. Thanks for taking my call. 2 simple questions about concrete. I'm having trouble finding answers online. 1, I have a 3-step stairs to the front door, and I want a contractor to install a simple handrail, like a wrought iron handrail. What do I look for?
Sure. In our area, there are some great metal fabricators that can custom make and install a metal handrail for you, simple or whatever you can imagine.
Yeah.
And so looking for a metal fabricator that can come out and measure, and they might have different ways they attach that, whether they're bolting it to the concrete with a base plate or they're core out and they'll set the metal into the concrete steps. that would be maybe there are some kits available that you can buy and assemble all the pieces together as well. But we found the ones that are custom made are the most durable, and it's not that bad for price wise if you're hiring someone.
I never would have thought about that. Great question. Yeah. Thank you, Kurt. JL emailed us. He's coated, painted his north-facing deck 5 or 6 years prior to painting the treated deck with cedar slats. A couple of years ago, in mid-October, he painted it with all-weather SW outdoor paint. It never set properly and stripped away as he moved furniture on the deck 1 or 2 weeks after it was painted. The following spring, the paint peeled off in various areas, has continued to do so. Scraping removes any flaking paint. Should he power spray and repaint? And that tends to tear into the wood, or use a paint remover?
I would recommend, if this was a Sherwin-Williams product, they have a product support line, and reach out to them, and they're going to be able to give you really specific things about what went wrong and how it can be corrected. And usually talking to the manufacturer in this case will give you the best results rather than trying to make it up as you go, and it'll save you a lot of time and effort.
That's a great idea, because it sounds like he put paint down and then maybe another product on top of that, and that can cause all kinds of problems, can't it?
Yeah, maybe it wasn't installed exactly right, or there was some interesting weather conditions that didn't help the situation mm-hmm. when he applied it.
Yeah, I would definitely encourage him to try to resolve this in the summer months if possible, because once we push into the fall, I mean, October is dicey for painting outside. Mm-hmm.
You never know. Okay, let's go to Perry in Oconto. Hi, Perry.
Yes, is there any kind of rule of thumb as far as I have some trees that are fairly close to the house and worried about damaging foundation, and are there certain trees that are more prone to damaging foundations?
Good question. Do you guys run into that? Roots causing foundation problems?
I have, but it's usually the foundation wasn't great.
Right.
It'd be like a block foundation that wasn't fully grouted. And, you know, then it's not a substantial foundation to start with. But not like in some of the other parts of the country where they have really aggressive tree roots that get underneath. I'm sure an arborist could evaluate them. It's more, you know, seeing if the tree's going to split and a large limb's going to fall in the house. That's usually been more our concern than tree roots lately. I don't know about
correct.
You, Chad.
I would agree with that. That's the biggest concern. And then when we're contemplating an addition or significant exterior improvements, we always have to be concerned about potential damage to trees that are going to be left in the yard that are close to that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a separate issue from a old tree that's grown next to something.
And
Perry, generally the tree roots of a tree don't extend past the drip line of the tree. So if you have a tree that's more upright and more of a narrow growing, you're going to have fewer branch or roots that are going to want to extend out. So if you're thinking about what kind of tree, that's something to keep in mind too. So good luck on that. Let's go to another email. We've got Josh from Washburn. He has a new garage with living space and he's finishing, and he has a buddy coming up to help him this weekend. He's a super great guy, but Josh wants to make sure he's not giving him work he's not able to do. And right now he's installing blue board for plaster veneer in the bathroom and finishing up wiring in a finished bonus room above the parking area. How much is Josh rolling the dice by having him help? The friend claims he has a background in this kind of stuff, but Josh doesn't want to make it awkward. Tony, you happen to know Josh? Are you going somewhere this weekend?
After the show, I'm going up to visit Josh that runs a... Yep. So that's my hi, Josh.
Josh, that's
great.
That was sassy.
Yeah, that was very good.
I was about to say, am I on a game show? Like, what's going on?
Nope. Yep. JW's Fun Boat Works.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question, though. I mean, if you do know someone, you guys probably get this all the time. You know, I need your help. How much do you put upon them to help you? And what if they're an expert? They say they're an expert, but they're really not. I mean, how do you deal with that? Neither one wants to take this.
I was thinking more of how it relates to when we're invited to, you know, friends or family, and they're like, hey, you know, I've got a little house question.
Sure. Like a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Do you mind when people ask you that? I mean, no.
I don't.
Okay. No. Right.
I can always set limits if it's, you know, getting too involved. But I've known Josh for a long time. And
okay.
Yeah, it's been 18 months since I visited him last and helped out. So it'll be fine.
Oh, okay. So he is not really imposing too much.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Well, I know if it's like me, people ask me plant questions. I'm like, yeah, I am there. I will totally help you out with that.
So. I think I put them to sleep before they put me to sleep.
Well, thank you for not putting our listeners to sleep today, Tony. We appreciate that. Let's go to Ted in northern Wisconsin. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes, thank you for this show. It's great. My question is, I want to put siding on my house. There's old wood siding now. And do I need to remove that and then apply 1-inch foam over that, or can I go with the foam right over the old siding?
What type of siding are you thinking of installing?
Vinyl siding.
With the vinyl siding, there's a vinyl installation guidelines handbook that's at the tip of my tongue. I can't remember right now. And they're going to call out what thickness of foam board you can install vinyl siding over. The bigger thing is to have a flat surface to install the vinyl siding. You know, if you're doing all this, it's a great opportunity to install additional insulation, but you can also cause some other problems there. So this might take some further investigation. If you're up to doing the work and pulling off that old wood siding, you can always inspect the sheathing and get a really good house wrap on there and install that properly. That's the biggest thing here, is just not to put the new siding over top of the old. But if you can get a good house wrap installed, and then think about your insulation scheme. You don't want to create a wet wall scenario where it can't dry out.
Yeah, and the problem with most foam that you would install is that it will also act as a vapor barrier. There are some insulation boards that are not vapor barriers, and we would generally recommend that you use those when you're doing something like this, because you have to get enough R value on the exterior of the home to prevent condensation from forming behind that new layer of foam board. The physics of it are a little complicated. I'll confess it took me a little while to wrap my head around this. But if you just put an inch of foam board on a home, as Tony's alluding to, you may end up getting regular condensation on the back of that foam board.
In the winter months.
And then it will be trapped there, and it will start to rot the wall of your house from the outside in. And the vapor has no way to escape. So then it tries to drive back into the house, and it just slowly rots that wall. So
the devil's in the details with this. So yeah. I would do some more research. It's a little hard to answer for your specific house on this limited time frame that we have, because right. It depends on your wall construction, how thick the walls are. Do you have an interior vapor barrier? Are your windows original? Do they have pan flashing? So there's a lot. Chad's right. So we're trying to keep out outside water, inside vapor drive, you know, and those sorts of things. And it's a tricky situation to get all the details right.
So, Ted, find an expert to help you out with that, because it could be a problem if you don't do it right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the question. We'd have time for maybe one or two more questions if you want. 800-642-1234. If you get a quick one in. We do have Joanne in Menominee Falls who has a question. Go right ahead, Joanne.
Hello. I'm thinking about the windows and the caulking around my windows and my doors, and I'm seeing that they're cracking. The house was built in 1962. It's the original caulk. How do I have that replaced? Should I take the old out, put new in? And if I have to take the old out, how do I do that? Or what's the best method of getting this replaced?
Sure, Jill. I would say with that age of house, before you start disturbing the caulk, you might want to have it tested for asbestos. Sometimes some of the old caulks have asbestos in them. and you can get a qualified professional out or even send a sample into the state lab of hygiene. And that's a good thing to do. And then, you know, if it's asbestos-free and there's no hazard, cutting out and creating a good caulk joint using backer rods so you don't have 3 points of contact, that's something you can buy from the hardware store. It comes in a foam roll. It's different widths. And then your new caulk will last a lot longer. That's a good way to start.
And what would you use to cut it out?
Oh, you can use a razor blade, kitchen knife, painter's tool.
So it comes out pretty easy.
Generally, well, with some elbow grease.
There's always elbow grease involved.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joanne. Get that. I had no idea that caulk could have asbestos in it.
It is everywhere.
It really is.
So the only materials we can assume don't are wood, glass, and metal.
Wow.
Yep. So it's more than just floors. Yep, but some of the caulks, more of the roof mastic sometimes. It's just a lot of different places. Mm-hmm.
Flooring, glue, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had some removed from the pipes in my basement, and it wasn't as expensive as I thought it was going to be. Has that cost gone down?
There are some really qualified abatement contractors out there, and they have some great systems, so I would reach out to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was pretty easy. They came in. They did most of it. They had a ventilation. They bagged it all, took it away. It was like, wow. I was really impressed.
Yep, disposed of properly, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. We had talked on the show a number of times about getting different people involved in construction. So more women, more people of color. Tony, you were mentioning over the break that you've actually have like 4 women carpenters on your team.
Yeah, we partner with Madison College, and they have a construction remodeling program that is really focused toward getting non-traditional people into the trades.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've hired those folks. We have some just amazing folks on our staff, 2 women lead carpenters. And hopefully they're listening right now, like Josh. So shout out to Abby, Paula, Carrie, and everyone on our team, and Elena. And so it's been great. They're a pleasure to work with, and remodeling's been a great fit for them and good fit for our company.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Chad?
So we've had women carpenters. We don't currently at the moment, but mm-hmm. Our management and design team includes women, certainly. And it is absolutely a trend in our industry that we don't have enough people in the trades, and a lot of talented women are helping to, you know, close the gap there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it takes a certain kind of person to want to be in that business. What kind of characteristics do you think is good for anybody who wants to go into the trades, Tony?
Sure. If you want to be out in the field and you feel like being physical, being outside, if you're good with spatial relationships, if you like working with your body, remodeling is a good fit for people that like to interact with more people and like the variety. I mean, there's lots of opportunities. The construction industry is huge, so you can also get into sales and design and project management and lots of other areas than the hands-on. But our team is second career, so they've looked at it to fit their lifestyle and their needs.
Mm-hmm. And the pay is not so bad, is it?
Oh, it's great. It's a great living.
Yeah. I'm going to give you my application when we're done.
Okay.
Just kidding. I love my job. We've been talking with Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Thank you, gentlemen. We really appreciate you coming in and helping our listeners out. And by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp Remodeling are 2 of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, and we thank them. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thank you for keeping it on WPR. Stay well.